Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I hope you all had a phenomenal Easter Sunday yesterday, remembering the sacrifice that Jesus made for us so many years ago on the cross, and that sacrifice allows us to be able to do what we do every single day. Hope you got to celebrate with some family, with some friends, maybe eat some good food along the way. I know I certainly had the opportunity to eat Easter lunch with my wife, with my family, and with a couple of my friends. It was certainly a great day. And I just wanted to take a few seconds at the beginning of the show just to acknowledge that and how important Easter Sunday is to us. I also want to acknowledge that there's been a lot going on in the world of college football. I will waste no time getting to the meat of the discussion because we certainly have a lot to unpack. But real quick, before I get into it, please, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Game Nashville podcast, where you can get all of our great podcasts that we offer here at 102.5 The Game. There are certainly a lot of great other podcasts other than the one you're currently listening to. So make sure to check those out as well. But please subscribe to The Game Nashville. You will never miss an episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And also, please follow me on the socials. I'm at Instagram. I'm at Twitter, X, whatever you call it, at Parker_Kelly10. Boy, do we have a lot to get to. Transfer portal news, players finding new homes, comments made about NIL, some rule changes that were presented, and also Lee Corso is going to retire after 40 years of College Game Day. My goodness, I mean, just so much to get into. And guys, it is April 21st. Who says the college football cannot be talked about in these months? I'm certainly not one of those people. Let's go and get into it, shall we? Nico Iamaliava is officially committed to UCLA. Now, this was rumored over the last week or so that he was in talks with UCLA. I believe it was Colin Cowherd, actually, who originally reported it, which was kind of strange. I had to do a double take when I first saw it. But Colin Cowherd was actually the first person, I believe, that broke the news that Nico was going to go to UCLA. Now, that was on Wednesday when that news broke, but it officially came out today. I believe it was Pete Thamel that reported it, that Nico is officially committed to UCLA. This really should not come as a shocker because it has been talked about. But also, if you consider that the kid is from Southern California, there wasn't necessarily a big market for Nico after the whole Tennessee situation went down. If you want to hear my thoughts on that, I'm not going to get into it today because, again, it's been talked about ad nauseum, not just by me, but by a lot of other people. I did a show on it that was released last week, a reaction pod, if you will. If you want to go hear my full thoughts, I highly encourage you to go check out that. But as for right now, I'm just reporting the news that he is officially committed to UCLA. What I do want to talk about is there's a lot of negative surrounding college football, whether there are things about it that you don't necessarily like, things that I may not like. There are positives about college football, and this is going to sound really weird at first when I say it, but I just need you to hear me out. There is a positive side to this whole Nico saga. Here's the positive. People now understand that there are issues regarding NIL and the transfer portal regarding the structure and format of how it is set up. Now, college football people like myself, like many others, I know Josh Pate over at CBS has talked about this. Joel Klatt over at Fox Sports has talked about this. I've heard Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, a bunch of guys, a bunch of college football, people who cover the sport for a living, have talked about the issues in structure with NIL, with the transfer portal. And that was not always apparent to the everyday fan or maybe the person that follows college football a little bit more casually. But after this whole Nico situation went down, it is now more apparent to everyone that there is an issue surrounding the structure of NIL in the transfer portal. Now, it is very easy for everyone to just pile on Nico Iamaliava. I'm not absolving him of any blame, because certainly there was a lot of blame to go around Nico and his camp. What I will say is, while Nico is an adult, while he can make these decisions, and if he's making the big bucks, he's expected to also make big decisions. And while this decision by Nico may have some backlash, it may have some repercussions, it may have its consequences, Nico is a 19-year-old who was being fed poor information by whoever was in his ear, whether that be his dad, whether that be his quote-unquote agent, whoever. He was being fed poor information. And the structure of NIL, where the athletes basically have the power, it did not serve Nico Iamaliava's best interests. That's what I'm trying to say. And it has now opened everyone's eyes to the apparent issue that college football reporters and experts have been seeing for a while. Now everybody knows about it. The light has been completely shown on it. Everybody knows that this is a problem. So, while Nico may be the sacrificial lamb in all of this, his situation has shown the world, has shown the country, has shown everybody who follows college football that there is a problem with NIL. There is a problem with the transfer portal. Those things aren't necessarily bad, but there are parts about it, if left unregulated, that can be detrimental for the sport. It's just like this. I'll put a very simple analogy. Fruit. If you eat fruit, if you eat vegetables, that's good for you. But too much fruit, too many vegetables, if consumed in a quick amount of time, can be actually bad for you. With the transfer portal, with NIL, if left unregulated, it can be detrimental for the sport. And I believe that that's what this Nico Iamaliava saga is showing the rest of the college football community. And it just continues, because now that Nico Iamaliava is officially committed to UCLA, UCLA had a transfer quarterback come over in the winter portal window named Joey Aguilar, who was the quarterback at App State. He was the presumed starter to be at UCLA before Nico Iamaliava committed to play for the Bruins. Where does that leave Joey Aguilar? I've heard his name be floated around Tennessee circles because they lost Nico. They have two scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. They need another quarterback. So where does that leave Joey Aguilar? Because if you were, I talked about this in my reaction to when Nico first had his fiasco with Tennessee. A lot of these schools already have their quarterbacks. There are very limited options for if you're a quarterback entering in the spring transfer portal window. There are not a lot of options. But with Tennessee, again, they have two scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. And considering how Josh Heupel has developed quarterbacks in the past, his fun offense, that seems like a destination for quarterbacks. I've heard Steve Angeli, who was the quarterback at Notre Dame, and I'm actually very shocked by this, but he entered the portal last week. I've heard his name be floated around Tennessee circles. I also saw a report from CBS Sports yesterday that Tennessee tried to go after Josh Hoover, who is the quarterback at TCU. Tennessee actually made a very lucrative offer by offering Hoover $1 million more to come to Tennessee, and they offered him $1 million more than what he's currently making at TCU, but Hoover and his reps declined the offer to stay at TCU. So if I'm the University of Tennessee, I absolutely need to go out and get a quarterback from the spring transfer portal window. However, I've talked about this in previous shows. If you're going to go out and get a quarterback, I don't believe you're going out to get a quarterback to be your starting quarterback. What I believe the University of Tennessee should do is, all right, you have Jake Merklinger, who is the most experienced quarterback on the roster. Granted, that's not a lot of experience. He had a couple plays in garbage time last year. But it's him or George McIntyre. And George McIntyre just got to campus in December. Jake Merklinger has the most experience in a Josh Heupel offense, even though it's not a lot. And I believe it should be, because of the current circumstances, which are not ideal by any means, I believe it should be Jake Merklinger's job to lose. It should be his job until he proves he cannot handle the load. But Tennessee cannot go into the season with two scholarship quarterbacks. They need to go out and get one of these guys, whether it's Joey Aguilar, who has not, to my knowledge, has not officially entered the transfer portal yet. Steve Angeli, I've heard his name, again, be thrown around Tennessee circles. So we're just going to have to see what happens with that. But again, if I'm the Vols, I'm not going out and getting a spring transfer portal quarterback to be my starting quarterback in 2025 unless things go terribly wrong with Jake Merklinger. I'm saying that on April 21st. That is my whole stance on this, because I just believe it is going to be incredibly difficult, complicated, whatever, for a quarterback to come in and not have that entire spring with his new teammates, to have to learn the system and be thrust into action into fall camp and then boom, right into the season. It's a very expedited process. I believe if you are a quarterback, ideally if you want to transfer to a new school, that's fine. But do it in the winter portal if at all possible. I know that not every situation is ideal, and there are some extenuating circumstances, but ideally, if you're going to transfer to a school, it is more beneficial to you, the player, if you do it before spring. Just so you have those reps with your new teammates, you have that experience with the playbook. As a former player, I will speak from personal experience. I always found it helpful having that spring to learn a new offense, because the coaching staff did change when I was in college. When that new staff came in, having that spring was to learn the new offense. It was incredible. It was just incredible to have that time just to get familiar with how things would be run come the fall. So that's kind of my take on it. But the spring transfer portal window has been blowing up. The University of Georgia got an absolute haul today in the portal as they landed three transfers today. Or excuse me, I'm recording on Sunday night. So you're going to get this on Monday. But Georgia landed three transfers on Sunday night. They picked up outside linebacker from Army, and I'm going to try my best to pronounce this name without butchering it. Elo Madoze from Army. That was the top rated outside linebacker in the portal. Got Illinois running back Josh McRae, which I believe was a ginormous pickup for the Bulldogs. And Miami defensive lineman Josh Horton. Madoze was the number 8 player in ESPN's spring transfer rankings. He had a breakout season with the Black Knights during their 12-win season. He produced a team-high 6.5 sacks, and he earned third-team All-AAC honors. McRae was Illinois' leading rusher last season. He didn't have a lot of rushing yards. He had 609, but averaged over 5 yards per carry and 11 total touchdowns. He was also the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl MVP. He had 114 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns versus a very solid South Carolina defense. So I believe that was a big pickup for Georgia, because coming out of spring practice, their running back room has been thoroughly impressive. And they did lose Branson Robinson, who was a former top 50 recruit, but they just backfill him with Illinois' leading rusher and Josh McRae. So I think that was a big pickup for the Georgia Bulldogs. And then also, they get a very, very solid defensive lineman from Miami and Josh Horton. Horton, 6'4", 295 pounds, played a total of 58 snaps over 8 games during 2 seasons at Miami. And I'm not necessarily expecting Horton to be a day-one starter, instant impact type of guy, but he provides some depth, some added depth for the Bulldogs' defensive front and size. And that's something that Kirby Smart has talked about in interviews, how his depth at Georgia has not been as deep as what he has had in previous seasons as the head coach there. So that's going to provide an ample amount of size and stability for the defensive front at Georgia. So they got a haul, and not to mention what they were able to add in the winter transfer portal window at wide receiver, getting Zachariah Branch from USC and Noah Thomas from Texas A&M. Georgia had an insane amount of drops last year by their wide receiver room. So going out and getting proven wide receivers in that winter transfer portal window, I think it's going to do the Bulldogs a lot of favors. So also, Bill Belichick and UNC making some moves, as it seems like they just got their quarterback in Gio Lopez. He committed to UNC from South Alabama. He threw for just over 2,500 yards, 18 touchdowns, 5 picks. Also completed his passes at a 66% rate. Also added 465 yards on the ground and another 7 touchdowns. So that is going to be the presumed starter in Chapel Hill, because Ryan Brown, who was a quarterback transfer from Purdue, transferred into Chapel Hill once he found out about the Gio Lopez news. Ryan Brown transferred right back to Purdue. So it seems like North Carolina has found their answer at quarterback. Now, I did see something, I believe it was from On3 today, how Jalen Rashada, if you are a diehard college football fan, you know that name, because he was a 5-star quarterback recruit out of high school. He had that whole saga with Florida where he signed his national letter of intent, and then he was able to get out of it once he found out that Florida was not going to pay him what he originally thought he was getting. Ended up going to Arizona State, played for a season there, transferred to Georgia. We didn't really hear a lot from him, and now he's back in the portal, and he is taking a visit to North Carolina. We'll have to see how that continues to churn out over the next couple of days, weeks or so. But that I just thought that was interesting. Andrew Simpson, who's the top linebacker in the portal from Boise State, he had 45 total tackles, 29 solo, 16 assists, 3 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, and an interception. He is still available, but again, the top-rated linebacker in the portal, Kennedy Urlacher. If that name sounds familiar, it should, because he is the son of Pro Football Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher. He committed to USC from Notre Dame. I believe that was a big pickup for USC. They need all the help they can get on the defensive end. Micah Hudson, former 5-star recruit. He originally was at Texas Tech, entered the portal, committed to Texas A&M. He's back in the portal. Who knows? He may go back to Texas Tech. But what I can guarantee is this is not a talent issue with Micah Hudson. The talent is there. I believe the reason that he's back in the portal has more to do with off the field. I don't really have the specifics on that, but it's definitely not a talent issue. David Stone. He is a former 5-star recruit as well, defensive lineman at Oklahoma. He entered the portal on Friday, but officially last night he withdrew, and he is back in Norman. That is pretty big for Oklahoma because, again, they were very solid on the defensive end last year. Losing David Stone would hurt, but having him back, that is a big win. Zach Rice, North Carolina. He was a former 5-star recruit, the number one offensive tackle in the 2022 class. He entered the portal last week. He is still looking for a home. Sticking on the offensive line front, Joe Cotton. He was at South Dakota last year in the FCS. He committed to Cincinnati. 4-star transfer portal product. This is huge for Cincinnati. Joe Cotton. That is going to be a name, if you're really into watching offensive line play, that's a guy you're going to want to watch. And this is one. I was actually looking at this yesterday. A.J. Hawley, who's a standout safety at Houston, he entered the portal 2 days ago. 6 foot, 215 pounds, 74 tackles, 5 interceptions, and 13 pass deflections last season. He's the first team all Big 12. And started every game for the Cougars the last 2 seasons. Somebody's going to be very lucky when they get A.J. Hawley. Just have to keep our eyes peeled and see what happens. We move merrily along as coaches have been outspoken, it seems like, lately about NIL, about the transfer portal, especially ever since the Nico situation, because that's all really anybody's talked about. But Fran Brown last week made some comments about a former player that he had that entered the portal in Trevor Pena. First of all, what you need to know is Fran Brown is one of the fastest growing star coaches in the sport. Now, you may not have heard of Fran Brown if you live in Salina, Tennessee, but that's because he's the head coach at Syracuse, and I'm assuming if you live in Salina, Tennessee, you probably don't follow Syracuse football. That's why I'm here to kind of help you out. So Syracuse is coming off a very successful season last year, 10-3, and one of their top players who had a pretty good amount of success last season, Trevor Pena, had 84 receptions, 941 yards, and 9 touchdowns. He's opted to hit the exit door for a couple of reasons. One, it is reported that he wanted $2 million. Fran Brown had some comments, basically said that he's not going to pay a wide receiver $2 million. The only wide receiver that is worth $2 million is the guy in Columbus, Ohio, a guy by the name of Jeremiah Smith. It has also been reported that Trevor Pena wanted a say in team decisions, basically decisions that are up to the coaches. Now, I've already mentioned in previous shows that players have never had it better than they currently have it right now. They get paid the big bucks. They have a say in where they can go to school. Basically, the term student athlete is kind of dead right now. It's more like athlete student in today's world of college football. But I just got to know, man, like, when did the players start being the ones to make demands? It's just so confusing to me because Trevor Pena was a phenomenal player last season for Syracuse. And Fran Brown is, I believe, going to be a superstar coach. But, and Fran Brown understands how special of a player Trevor Pena was last season. But when you make demands like that, that a coach, like, Fran Brown already said he wasn't comfortable giving Trevor Pena $2 million. So when demands are made by a player and the coach doesn't feel comfortable with it, something has to give. Fran Brown understands this. Now, I'm sure Fran Brown didn't want to let Trevor Pena go because, again, he is a great player. But Fran Brown stood his ground. He's like, okay, you want those demands? I'm going to have to let you go. And sure enough, Trevor Pena is currently in the transfer portal. We saw Josh Heupel stand his ground with Nico Iamaleava last week. Now we're seeing Fran Brown stand his ground with a player like Trevor Pena. They're not being jerks about it either. They truly are acting in the best interest of the team, because if players start making demands, again, that you don't feel comfortable with, and more importantly, demands that they haven't earned, if you give in to those demands, then what does that say about you as a coach? And also, who's to say that Jimmy down in the running back room won't come knocking on your door and start asking for a $1 million raise as well? It sets a bad precedent if you give in to the demands. And Fran Brown doesn't strike me as the person to do that. So Fran Brown said, Trevor, I love you, man, but I can't meet those demands. And if you want them, you're going to have to search for them somewhere else. And that's what happened. Again, wasn't a jerk about it. I'm sure he loves Trevor Pena very much. In fact, he said it that he did. But again, when those demands are met, or when those demands are made, something has to give. And I certainly have a lot of respect for Fran Brown and the decisions that he's made. Continue to keep an eye out for him because he's going to be a superstar head coach. Okay. Some rule changes were made in college football. It was reported last week that the NCAA has approved a rule change to stop fake injuries. Under this new rule, if medical personnel are forced to enter the field of play to evaluate an injured player after the ball is spotted by the officiating crew, the player's team will be charged a timeout by the officials. If that team has no timeouts remaining, the officials will assess a 5-yard penalty against the team. Let me just say that we all agree that the idea of faking an injury to get an advantage is very dishonest and it's very unethical. Here's the problem with this new rule, because honestly, you have no way of telling if a player is actually injured or not. But, again, one team, one player, since the faking injuries front was repeated over and over and over, and it became a pattern, you basically forced those that are making the rules, you forced their hand. This sucks, because if a player is actually injured, it's going to cost your team a timeout. And if you don't have a timeout, it's going to cost your team a penalty. But this could have easily been prevented just by simply stop. Just simply stopping the idea of faking an injury. This could have been prevented. But this is what happens. If you are going to continue to fake injuries, you're costing everybody else. So I believe that that's what this rule is a result of. There are also some more rule changes that were made. Overtime timeouts. Each team will have one timeout beginning with the third overtime until a winner is decided. In previous years, each team was given a timeout during each period of overtime. So in that Georgia Tech game that we witnessed in November, in each overtime, both Georgia and Georgia Tech were given a timeout. Under this new rule change, you get one timeout from the third overtime until the game is decided. So if a game goes into seven overtimes, the game goes into eight overtimes, they only get one timeout from that third overtime until the eighth overtime or whatever. This is basically meant to keep the game moving. Understandable. But they could have made other overtime rules too, but we don't always get what we want. I'll save that conversation for another time. Other rule changes that were made. Officials will refer to calls on the field after an instant replay as upheld or overturned. The terms confirmed or stands will no longer be used on kickoff returns. If any player on the return unit makes a T with their hands, the team gives up the right to return the kick and the play will be whistled dead. Another one. After the 2-minute timeout in either half, if a team commits a foul with 12 or more players on the field, all players that are participating in the play, the officials will administer a 5-yard penalty. The offensive team will have the option to reset the game clock back to the time at the start of the play. If the 12th player is attempting to leave the field and has no influence on the play, the defensive team will be penalized 5 yards with no adjustment to the game clock. This, my friends, should be referred to as the Dan Lanning rule, because this rule has been put into place because of what happened at the end of the Oregon-Ohio State game last season. I've already mentioned that I do not like rule changes that are targeted at one specific team, hence why I believe that the tush push in the NFL should not be banned. But it is what it is. It's a new rule change now in college football. There are no more loopholes regarding having 12 men on the field. And here's a rule change that I thought was really interesting. Coach-to-player helmet communication will now be used in the FCS. So I think that's pretty cool. Moving right along, man, we are moving at a brisk pace. We are 30 minutes in and still have a lot of show to go. There was a lot of backlash this weekend as Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter had their number retired at Colorado's spring game. Many are saying that this was premature, not necessarily for Travis Hunter. I think we all understand why Travis Hunter is having his jersey retired. I mean, we are talking about the 2024 Heisman Trophy winner. I think this is more so the backlash that this has received has been so more targeted at Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter are only the 5th and 6th player in Colorado's history. And the university has been around for 139 years. They are only the 5th and 6th player in Colorado's history to receive the honor. Many players that I've seen on Twitter and social media have said, many former players, I should say, at Colorado, are saying they're not upset about Hunter and Sanders getting their jersey retired. They're more so upset at the fact that their process to jersey retirement was expedited while there are former Buff players who remain in line. specifically from the 1990 National Championship squad. So here's what I'll say. Here's what I'll say regarding this whole thing. Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter's impact on the program was huge. I'm sure a lot of you are listening to this right now and saying, but Parker, they never won a bowl game. They went 4-8 in 2022. I know. Context is important here. You got to remember where Colorado was two seasons ago before Deion Sanders, before Shedeur Sanders, before Travis Hunter got there. We're talking about a 1-11 football program that had basically the equivalence to zero when we're talking about national relevancy. But when Deion Sanders got there, yes, they did go 4-8. However, that was a 3-win improvement from the season prior. And if you're looking at that through that lens, improving your record by 3 wins, I would say that was pretty successful. And he also brought national relevancy to Colorado. If you're considering what they did this year, they were ranked for most of the season. Travis Hunter obviously won the Heisman Trophy. Shedeur Sanders won the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award, which is given to the best quarterback in college football. Again, the issue with this whole thing has not been directed at Travis Hunter. I don't think anybody would have any quarrels if it was just announced that Travis Hunter is the only one getting his jersey retired. There would be no qualms about it. When you throw Shedeur Sanders into the mix, that's when the conversation starts to get a little bit dicey. And I've been high on Shedeur Sanders. I thought he was a phenomenal quarterback the last two seasons at Colorado. And if you disagree with me, we can argue that at another time. I'm not going to do that now. I do agree that this process for Shedeur Sanders was certainly expedited, and that there are a long list of players in Colorado's history that are kind of waiting in line for their jersey retirement as well and for their number to get retired. So I agree that that whole process with Shedeur Sanders was certainly a quick turnaround. Do I think that eventually his jersey could have been retired? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Shedeur Sanders was phenomenal in what he did for that Colorado program in the 2 years he was there. But yes, I do agree that the process for him specifically was very quick and a very expedited process, like I said. Travis Hunter, I have no qualms about it. And Deion Sanders actually came out, and because, you know, any decision that Deion Sanders makes and anything that has to do with the Sanders family is going to get a lot of national attention. So, of course, there were critics behind this whole deal. And Deion Sanders said, well, if he didn't have the last name Sanders, what would you be saying about it? Well, he kind of makes the point that the rest of us are making by the fact that his last name is Sanders, so naturally, he's going to, because his last name is Sanders, he's going to jump in front of a lot of people who are waiting in line to get their jersey retired. So that's kind of what I'll say about that. But again, I have a lot of respect for what Travis Hunter did and what Shedeur Sanders did for that Colorado program. I don't look for ways to bash those two players. And I know it's on a lot of people's radar, and I'm not going to try to change your mind on that, because ultimately you think what you think, you believe what you believe. I'm just saying what I believe about this whole thing. Moving right along, there were some spring games that were played this past weekend, including Michigan's spring game And that was really the first chance that the national audience got to see new freshman quarterback Bryce Underwood perform. And as you can expect, there were some ups and downs in his spring game. Ultimately, on the day, Underwood was 12 of 26 for 187 yards. And to actually conclude the day, Underwood threw an 88-yard pass to tight end Jalen Hoffman on a reverse flea flicker that actually sealed the deal for the Blue over the Maize. So that was certainly a glimpse of what Bryce Underwood can bring to the table. Now, I'm not putting too much stock into this because spring games are a little bit different. I think we can all agree on that than an actual college football game. But we all know the potential Bryce Underwood has. We all know the talent that that kid has. So I'm not putting a lot of stock into this. But if you watched it, and even if you watched highlights, you can certainly see the glimpses of what Bryce Underwood brings to the table. And for reference, his 88-yard touchdown pass on the flea flicker on Saturday, Michigan's longest pass last season, I believe, was 33 yards. So, take that for what you will. I'm just putting it out there. So, I don't know how much this has been talked about, but I just wanted to go ahead and address it. So, Max Crosby, the current defensive end for the Las Vegas Raiders, has accepted a position to become the assistant general manager at Eastern Michigan. He is the first active NFL player to hold a position such as this. Now, we are seeing this in the NBA already because Steph Curry is the assistant general manager at Davidson. Trae Young holds the same position at his alma mater in Oklahoma. This is now starting to happen in the NFL. Now, we've seen former NFL players take positions like Andrew Luck. He is the general manager at Stanford where he played. Ron Rivera is the general manager at Cal where he played back in the day. And now we have active players, Max Crosby, who are now in positions of authority in the general manager office. So Crosby's job will be to evaluate high school and portal prospects, manage the school's NIL budget, serve as a special assistant to fundraising, alumni relations, and student-athlete support. I love this. I absolutely love this because we're seeing players wanting to get involved with their former schools. And not to mention, here's what's so great about this. Max Crosby is a player who, if you've watched him play on Sunday, you know that he has a motor that just never shuts off. And I believe that is going to serve Eastern Michigan very well in recruiting. Here's why. Because he's an alumni of the school who has had a great deal of success in the NFL, which is the highest level of competition in football. And he came from Eastern Michigan. He knows the culture of the school. Again, he's an example of someone who has achieved the highest levels of success despite coming from a mid-major school. This provides a recruiting advantage. If you're going to be working with a guy like Max Crosby, who knows what it takes to not only get to the NFL, but have a great amount of success in the NFL as well. And ultimately, I just love the fact that he's giving back to a school that did so much for him. Because I know that, you know, I went to high school in the mid-state here in Tennessee, and I know that one day I would love to give back to my school. And I just love seeing other players like Max Crosby giving back to their school. And even though they're not in college football, but Steph Curry at his alma mater at Davidson, Trae Young at Oklahoma, I love how they're wanting to get involved and help their programs. Andrew Luck at Stanford, Ron Rivera, they go back to their alma maters, and I just love to see it. So I just wanted to take a quick moment to address that. And to end the show, I wanted to save this segment for last. So if you're still listening, thank you. Because the words I'm about to say, I believe will touch a lot of you. Lee Corso announced last week that he would be retiring from College Game Day. His last show would be on August 30th of this year. So we will get one more College Game Day with the great Lee Corso. As a college football fan, and Lee Corso has been a staple in the sport. I have some of my earliest memories of watching college football include getting up early on Saturday morning and seeing and watching College Game Day, waiting until the very end to see who Lee Corso would pick with his famous headgear selections. And you know that you've done something right when you're at a game at a college football venue, and kind of the talking points among the day are, you know, are you excited for the game, and who do you think is going to win, and also who did Lee Corso pick in the headgear? You know you've made it big. And also too, do you know how hard it is to stay relevant in something for four decades, but yet Lee Corso has done that on College Game Day. He's been around for 40 years doing College Game Day, and he is the driving force behind making it what we all know it to be. And here's really one of the cool things about Lee Corso. Lee Corso actually played college football back in the day. He's a really good corner for Florida State. Then he went on to coach at schools like Louisville and Indiana, and he was a phenomenal coach as well. And, you know, by that point, you're kind of on the back half of your career, at least, you know, for Lee Corso, so you think. But you're about to embark on something that is going to be your legacy, which is College Game Day. When I say the name Lee Corso, most of you don't think of Lee Corso the player, Lee Corso the coach. You think of Lee Corso, the guy with the headgear on College Game Day. That's his legacy, and that's just so incredible to think about, because by the time he was done coaching in his 50s, he wasn't even about to – he hadn't even started with College Game Day, the thing that would bring him the most notoriety. So for those of you that are listening, if you're in your 40s or in your 30s and you're at a job, it should give you a lot of hope to know that, like, hey, like, maybe I haven't even started the thing yet that will become my legacy, because that's certainly the case with Lee Corso. And I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss Lee Corso. I watched the tribute video that Kirk Herbstreit did, you know, because that relationship between Herbstreit and Corso is just pure gold. I saw Reese Davis come out with about a 3-minute clip, just kind of giving a short tribute to Lee Corso. Chris Fowler did the same thing. And I know that's only scratching the surface, because all eyes nationally are going to be on College Game Day on August 30th to see the type of tribute they're going to give to Lee Corso. I personally cannot wait. And Lee, if you happen to be listening to this right now, I just want to thank you for all the great memories and what you've done for college football. It has truly been a honor and a pleasure to watch. And, man, I'm just going to miss him. I felt like that was a very fitting ending to a very jam-packed, long show. Again, guys, we're almost in May. It means we're turning that corner from spring ball. We're heading on full speed into what will soon to be fall camp, and then we're right into the season. Guys, the action never slows down. on the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Make sure that you are subscribed to the Game Nashville. You will never miss another episode of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And also, please follow me on the socials at Parker_Kelly10. We are going to have another show for you on Wednesday. And it is going to be a good one because we are going to have Outkick's Chad Withrow, one of the hosts of Hot Mic. He will be joining us on Wednesday to talk some college football. You are not going to want to miss that. I promise you, you are not going to want to miss that. The first guest we've ever had on the Air Raid. So, should be really fun. Make sure you're staying tuned for that conversation on Wednesday. And it is going to be a blast. I'll talk to you then.